I didn't have to think too long about the book I wanted to talk about today, purely because I postponed talking about it in my first episode of the year. So without further ado, join me as I take a visit to the sort of peaceful Thameside town of Marlow as I have a cup of tea with Judith, Susie and Bex in Robert Thorogood's fifth and most recent instalment of the Marlow Murder Club, The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts. I'm Ray, an unapologetic bookworm, introvert, self-confessed hermit and long-time depression sufferer. This is my quiet space to share thoughts as I make my way through an ever-growing to-be-read pile. There are now 17 books on my dining table waiting to be shelved. Join me as I explore stories one book at a time with 100% honest and completely spoiler-free reviews. Welcome to my bookish world, and please enjoy your stay. A killer is on the loose, the bodies are piling up, and Judith is hiding a deadly secret. Someone from Judith's past has turned up in Marlow and is stirring up trouble. With all the murders that the Marlow Murder Club have had to solve and her work setting crosswords, Judith's been too busy to give her old life much thought, but now it's knocking on her door and won't go away. On top of that, Marlow celebrities are getting murdered. When a footballer and a thriller writer are found dead, Judith, Susie and Bex must untangle a web of scandal to find the killer. But with Judith keeping secrets, the Marlow Murder Club find themselves drifting apart. The pressure is on in more ways than one. Can they find the killer and help Judith in time? Or could this be the end of the Marlow Murder Club? As ever, I am going to keep the detailed discussion and my personal opinion about the plot, characters and experiences, and of course some of the underlying themes in the novel, in the review section at the end. And I am still going to maintain my no spoilers attitude so that I really don't ruin anything for you, because with a mystery, there is so much that could be ruined. The book opens as the previous novel, Murder on the Marlow Bell, ended, with Judith answering her front door after the trio have celebrated solving the mystery of who murdered Oliver Beresford. No one could be more surprised and perhaps a little bit horrified than Judith than she is when she is confronted by Eleni Perfidis. Upon meeting, Eleni reveals that she is the daughter of an affair between Judith's late husband, Philippos, and his childhood sweetheart. However, Eleni soon shares her reasons for appearing on Judith's doorstep in Marlow. She's not there for a reunion, nor is she there to reminisce about the father she never knew. Instead, full of bitterness and accusations, more than likely helped along by Philippos' mother, she presents Judith with a mysterious photograph she claims is irrefutable proof that Judith was responsible for Philippos' death in Corfu 49 years before. Judith is forced into a defensive position, facing the reality that her carefully constructed life is at risk of being dismantled by a past she has kept hidden for nearly half a century, mostly out of guilt and pain. While Judith is grappling with the mystery of the photograph that tests show is real, despite her own belief that there is no way it can be, and of course Eleni's accusations, a separate string of violence begins to unravel the town's social fabric. Gary Best, a local footballing legend, is found shot dead. Shortly after, the town is hit by a second high-profile killing when the successful thriller novelist Mike Saxon is also murdered. This double homicide creates a crisis for the Marlow Murder Club, especially as their vital link to the police force has been severed with Tanaka Malik's suspension from the force. Is this because of resentment at her use of civilian help, or the belief that her unorthodox methods are damaging the force? The investigation has been left in the hands of her replacement, DS Brendan Perry. Unlike Tanaka, Perry is a strict traditionalist who views the trio as a nuisance and actively blocks their access to the investigation, making no bones about his feelings for the three women. He's dismissive, resentful, and at times outright rude. The pressure of the situation puts the close friendship between Judith Bex and Susie to the ultimate test. As Judith becomes increasingly distracted due to Eleni's presence, her friends notice she is becoming withdrawn. They won't let her face this personal crisis alone, though. Her inability to confide in them completely makes this quite difficult. Their bond, forged over previous murders, becomes Judith's primary lifeline. While they provide the emotional support, Judith needs to confront her past and the secrets she still carries with her, where her past with Philippos is concerned. They realise they must take the lead in the local murder investigation to protect their friend from further scrutiny by the hostile DS Perry. He is absolutely awful. Susie and Bex begin to look for a common thread between the footballer and the novelist, discovering that the victims were part of an exclusive local social circle. As they dig further into the victims' recent activities, they find a trail of professional jealousies and financial secrets, as well as serious evidence of blackmail. All of this connects both men and suggests that the killer is someone intimately familiar with Marlowe's elite. Judith's personal crisis and the local murder investigation begin to converge as Judith herself realises that the secrets of her life in Greece might not be as disconnected from the present as she had hoped. She has to navigate a legal and emotional minefield, trying to verify the evidence Eleni has brought to her while discreetly guiding Susie and Bex through the complexities of the double murder. And I think I'll stop there. To go further would reveal way too much. Keeping the major twists and turns a secret remains my priority when it comes to reviewing any book. And I always promise, I really do, I won't share any spoilers, so you won't be hearing about the murderer and their motives from me. And it is time for the Being Bookish public service announcement. As with every episode, I should probably just record this and drop it in every week. Just know I don't tell you about these books to influence you into reading them. Or not, as the case may be. I just love to share the books I have been picking up, whether it's from a bookstore, subscription box, charity shop, or kindly given from a publisher or author. With reading, there is sadly no guarantee that you're going to love every single book. I know, I certainly do not. Or dislike something just because I said it wasn't really my thing. So always read what appeals to you. Never let someone else's taste dictate what you enjoy or don't. Anyway, less of that. The public service announcement is over. Let's see what others thought about the mysterious affair of Judith Potts before I get to my personal feelings on the book. I am going to have to add a tiny bit of a disclaimer here, and it's only the second time in almost 5.5 years that I've had to do this. I searched long and far for a 1-star review of this book. Not because I wanted to, but because I honestly believe a balanced perspective is important. However, I was unable to find one. A few people on Goodreads gave the book a one or two star rating, but they didn't provide a review or reasons behind that choice, which is fair enough. You don't have to write a review. I mean, some people don't review anything, and some people don't rate it either. That meant I had to look at the middle of the road reviews, the 3-star opinions. As such, it's not quite as pithy as a 1-star review might turn out to be, so please do bear with me. Alison gave the book 3 stars. This was admittedly her first foray into Thorogood's work, though she had the TV series to compare it to. She said,
"Someone is killing Marlowe's celebrities. A former England footballer and a famous author were both shot dead. Who will be next? Meanwhile, a stepdaughter she never knew existed has appeared in Judith's life, accusing Judith of murdering her, Judith's husband, and demanding she confess, or she, Eleni, will take her evidence to the police. Confession time. This is the first book in the series that I have read. I tried to watch the TV series and found it beyond irritating, but I thought people must love this because it's the 5th book. so I requested an ARC to give it a go. My conclusion is that the book was very similar in feel to the TV series, and just not for me. Judith is clearly the leader of the trio of amateur sleuths, with a mysterious past and a job as a crossword setter for the local newspaper. Then the other two, Susie and Bex, are somewhat interchangeable. One is a vicar's wife and one walks dogs. Might be the same one. One is very pretty. There is an absurd plot involving breaking into a real tennis men's changing rooms and hiding in a shower. Also, I have serious questions concerning Judith's passport. Anyway, I didn't guess the identity of the murderer, but I believe that is because the clues were all minuscule and the reader isn't put in possession of all the facts. Overall, if you enjoyed the previous four books and or the TV series, I am sure you will enjoy this book too. As I said, not for me, but the plotting was clever.
If I'm going to be completely honest here, and I always try to be, I was expecting it to be rather tough to get a balanced array of reviews for this particular book. And it's something that I did make mention of as a reason for postponing reviewing it for a couple of weeks when I talked about it in my previous episode. While some authors seem to attract reviews like moths to a flame, others sit quietly in a corner, garner a mixture of heartfelt compliments and occasional disdain before sinking back onto the bookstore or library shelves to be reread by dedicated fans until the binding wears out and the next book is placed beside it. For some reason, that is what happens with a considerable number of books in the cozy mystery genre. There are a few authors who attract a lot of reviews, the ones who seem to be on everyone's lips all over social media and get hundreds of column inches, but most have a quieter presence. And the Marlowe Murder Club series appears to be one of them, even though it is written by the guy who created Death in Paradise, which is one of the BBC's most successful exports. The overall rating for The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts is somewhat consistent across both Storygraph and Goodreads. On Goodreads, it has a 4.16, and on Storygraph, it has a minutely lower rating of 4.15. I have no doubt that over time it will fluctuate, as the book was only released a couple of weeks ago on the 15th of January, so there is plenty of time for it to change. Right now, the book has 481 ratings and 124 full reviews on Goodreads, and over on Storygraph, it has 75 ratings and 40 reviews. To put these figures in perspective, the first book in the series, which came out back in 2021, has a total of 77,035 ratings and 8,063 reviews. In comparison with the more popular Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman, which was released the year before, that book has almost 779,000 ratings and more than 78,000 reviews. There are just some books that gain more attention from audiences than others. Though there aren't that many reviews available, the vast majority are incredibly positive, which is always nice to see, even if it does make it tougher for me to maintain a balanced perspective at the start of this episode, because obviously I do provide my own opinion, which isn't going to be balanced. It is personal, because reading is subjective. Kath read The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts on NetGalley prior to release and seems to be a fan of the series overall. She gave the book 5 stars and said,
"Well, haven't we all been waiting for this book with bated breath after the way the author left book 4, with an unexpected visitor arriving at Judith's door? Obviously, you all know this, having started from the beginning and having read the previous, all cracking, books in order. And what an unexpected and definitely unwanted guest Eleni turns out to be. But I will have to leave you to discover who she is and what she wants from Judith yourself. Meanwhile, there is also murder afoot, and as usual, Judith, Susie and Bex want in on the action as police advisors, but there is a spanner in the works as Tanaka is not available to co-opt them, as she has been suspended, leaving DS Brendan Perry in charge. What could possibly go wrong there? Then murder becomes murders, and the chase is on for our erstwhile amateur super sleuths to go it alone to figure out who and why, which, when they eventually figure it out, is more than shocking. Oh, I loved this book, especially as, with Judith a wee bit preoccupied, Susie and Bex have come into the spotlight a little bit more. And then, with regard to Judith and her mysterious visitor, well, this just brings up a load of interesting backstory for her and also provides the spark for her to really open up to her friends. And then the main case. Although I did guess a tad early, and yes, it's one of those solutions which I don't usually like, but it was well done and I did have a blast reading the rest of the book, so I can easily forgive the author. I mean, some of the ways that the girls used to wheedle information out of people did impress me and occasionally made me chuckle. And at the end of the day, it did all make sense and was wholly satisfying.
Normally, at this point, I would be talking about how different these two reviews were. However, in this particular instance, that isn't really the case. While one reviewer didn't really enjoy the book, finding it wasn't to her taste, she didn't find it to be a book she disliked to the level of someone who would probably, possibly rate it a one-star read. Of course, it's early days yet. The book has only been out for a couple of weeks in the UK, and in the US, it's not set to come out until July this year. I can't believe it's July. That's such a long time. And normally we don't get things first, so yay us. Right, now I've mentioned what others are saying, here's what I really think about The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts by Robert Thorogood. No spoilers, just me being 100% honest. Did I like the book? That cliffhanger in Murder on the Marlowe Bell really had me eagerly anticipating the arrival of The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts. To present us with that ending and then leave us waiting is the literal definition of cliffhanger. I really couldn't wait to find out what happened next. The last two lines of Murder on the Marlowe Bell are, "You're my stepmother," the woman said, fire in her eyes, "and you murdered my father." Fear punched into Judith's stomach as she realised who the woman was, and her world collapsed. Seriously, to leave us with that for what was, in my case, a few months, as I was incredibly disciplined and ordered the indie bookstore paperback, but for many, it could have been a year, was cruel and clever, but mostly cruel. Of course, my curiosity was not contained for long, and when publishers, book tour companies, and PR started to send out emails with The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts listed as an option, I began applying to take part, to promote, because curiosity killed this cat, but satisfaction definitely brought her back. Finally, after several attempts, I received an email saying that my request for a proof had been accepted. And then I had a copy in my hands. I knew exactly what I was getting when I opened this book. I knew that I was getting a cozy mystery with a strong, determined woman about to be brought to her knees by someone who wanted revenge for some imagined slight. Or rather, that's what I was sort of sure of. Was I right? Well, to find out the whole truth, you will have to pick up a copy for yourself. I just want to give you my opinion, and maybe I am a tad biased in this instance. I have never lied when it comes to the cozy mystery genre. I am not a fan of the Thursday Murder Club, and I'm not entirely sure why I never warmed to the characters in it, nor the storylines. The Netflix movie was okay, but for some reason, I feel some kind of strange distance between me and those characters. However, I love Judith, Bex, and Susie and the intriguing world they have built around their unusual friendship. There is something truly cozy about it to me. The habits they each have, the lives they've built, the people they surround themselves with. It feels as though I am reading a modern take on Miss Marple, but with less knitting and gatherings at the vicarage, or Village Fate, and more scandal-ridden garden parties and naked swimming in the Thames. Of course, there is a TV series, and while I enjoy that plenty, the books are still my first port of call. The series is cute, but Judith isn't quite as I imagined, played by Samantha Bond, a previous Miss Moneypenny no less. She's strong, stern, and more than a decade younger than book Judith, which automatically changes the balance of the characters. Or at least it does for me. That doesn't mean the series is no good, it just alters the dynamic of the books, which I happen to enjoy. Both Bex and Susie look upon Judith as someone who has a tendency towards not being exactly doddery, she's incredibly independent, but maybe in some instances a little bit more vulnerable. They are protective of her without being condescending. The TV show lacks this particular emotion, as on-screen Judith is younger, in fact still young enough to be in full-time work, but wealthy enough not to need it. Of course, you're here to listen to me talk about the book, so I am going to. After that incredible cliffhanger, the opening of the book picks up right where we left off, with Eleni Pafidis confronting Judith with her "You killed my father" declaration, and she claims she has the proof to back it up. Of course, as this is happening, across Marlowe a murder is taking place, because we all know how these books go. If someone wasn't dying in a mysterious or nasty way, there wouldn't be a story. Distracted by her own personal battles, Judith leaves Susie and Bex to their own devices a lot, and it's great to see both of these women coming into their own, thinking on their feet and pushing toward finding the guilty party, all the while worried about Judith and her own situation. Then, of course, there's Tanaka, who has been suspended. Being fair, she's been working with three women who stick their noses into things, waving around a lanyard as though it's a police badge and getting in the way. Though, do they really? Especially when they definitely help far more than they hinder. Tanaka's replacement, Brendan Perry, is a cool, calculating and rule-following man who has been coveting Tanaka's position, resentful of her success rate and determined that he is going to force Judith, Susie and Bex out. He doesn't want their help and he's not slow in making sure their type of investigation is not something he's interested in. All the way through the book, he makes it obvious that he's going to make things difficult for them if they don't step back and leave him to do his job. Though there is always someone to dislike in a Marlowe Murder Club novel, usually it's the person you suspect of the murder, or at least someone who you would happily add to the suspect list. In this book, we're gifted with two. The mean-spirited, vengeance-seeking Eleni, who wants nothing more than to see Judith rot in prison for the crime she is sure her stepmother committed, and the rule-following, rude Brendan Perry. From the very start of this series of books, I have loved Judith's gumption. She has an attitude, she knows what she wants, she is confident, and does what feels right to her. In the mysterious affair of Judith Potts, we see a side to her that had previously remained hidden. She seems vulnerable. Her past has been dragged up by someone who is evidence of her husband's infidelity years after his death, and she has to confront this reminder of something she clearly would much rather forget, along with reliving the torture of accusations she was forced to defend herself against when she was a young widow, alone and isolated by people who had never really accepted her. The contrast between young Judith and the woman we are usually presented with is strong, and one I really enjoyed reading. If you really enjoy a cozy mystery, then I would recommend this one. That said, I don't think it should be read as a standalone, as some have stated they did in their reviews, especially as it is part of a series, and the other stories provide something of a build-up to the mysteries in this one. Although the core mystery, that of Judith's past, is not the main focus of the previous novels. If you enjoyed The Mysterious Affair of Judith Potts or want to read something similar, try these. I have a long list of cozy mysteries in my read list on Goodreads. Some I loved, some were really not for me. There are so many authors out there who have dipped their toes in the mystery pond, Some have stayed to enjoy a lengthy swim, while others have jumped out after one novel and moved elsewhere. Whether you're looking for a new genre or want to revisit this as an old favourite, there are several novels that I would recommend. Every aficionado knows that The Queen of Crime is a must-have on any list when you're talking about mysteries. Mine wouldn't be complete without her. So Agatha Christie and her creations need to be here. No mystery shelf feels complete without a Poirot or a Marple on it. Personally, I prefer Poirot, but everyone seems to have their favourite. Evil Under the Sun, Murder in Mesopotamia, and Hickory Dickory Dock are all three that I love and have read several times. And they are all mysteries featuring Christie's Belgian detective. Don't call him French, he will resent it. Though there is currently only one book, Just Desserts, the second book in the Mrs. Sidhu series, is due out in February. Dead and Scone by Suk Panu was an enjoyable introduction to anyone who had not listened to the BBC radio plays or enjoyed the four-part series on You back in 2023. Sadly, the series was not renewed, but the first book was incredible fun and can be seen as something of a replacement to Acorn TV's cancellation era. And it really was an era, because that series was great fun and the book was a wonderful addition and introduction to her character. If you love the Cotswolds, why not try the Agatha Raisin books by M.C. Beaton? Beaton passed the baton to a new writer in 2019 when she passed away, and fans seem to have divided opinion on whether R.W. Greene is doing so well looking after this PR agent turned private investigator. But if you are looking for something new to try, there are currently 36 novels in the series for you to choose from. My favourite is still the first, The Quiche of Death. It's a fantastic instalment, really good cozy mystery, and though some may disagree with me, I did like the Ashley Jensen Sky TV version of it. It was fantastically cast in my view. While I've already acknowledged I am not a fan, I've mentioned it several times, I can't deny that the Thursday Murder Club series by Richard Osman has a strong fan base. Based in a retirement village, four pensioners form a club to investigate old cases, using their previous job experience to solve murders. When a murder takes place involving people they know, they start to investigate in the hopes that they can save their home and put the guilty party behind bars. Of course, that's only the first book in the series. There have been several since. I know, just by looking at my own shelves, that there are a great number of options out there for you to choose from, including books by authors such as Tom Hindle, Rosemary Schrager, Kate Ayles, and so many more. I've done reviews on a number of them and I will post them below so you can check them out and discover if there's anything there that you really like. This week has been incredibly busy, so much so that I have barely read any books. I'm still working my way through the Dungeon Anarchist's Cookbook, which is the third in the Dungeon Crawler Carl series by Matt Dinnerman, while also tackling the wonderful selection of novels sent to me in preparation for even more interviews in the coming months. And when I tell you I have some incredible experiences in store, believe it. As I was looking at my bookcase and contemplating the novels I have recently finished, I realised that there is one that I could talk about, though officially it is not released until the 29th of January. But that is this week, and I am actually participating in a book tour on the 30th to mark publication day and further promote it to a wider audience on social media. So I'm going to talk about a book that has been incredibly present on Instagram, at least from what I've seen, and is something of a commentary on social media and the world of fandom as a whole. This week's second book is Esther Is Now Following You by Tanya Sweeney. I'm not exactly sure where this book lands when it comes to category, but it does blend a lot of genres together. The story has a slightly sinister undertone, some mental health references, quite a few mental health references, grief, marriage breakdown, and child loss. And these are probably the warnings I should be giving here. Esther is in a marriage that seems stable. She has great friends, a job that she loathes, and on the surface, everything seems good. Both she and her husband want children, so their bedroom fun is more perfunctory than fun. But when Esther finally falls pregnant, it seems as though everything is slotting into place. Finally, her mother stops talking about Esther's job, and it's all great until Esther loses the baby at 4 months. Something shuts off between her and her husband at this moment, and things go from bad to worse as she struggles to process and won't talk to him about her feelings, simply staying at home and building shallow relationships online as she becomes obsessed with an actor who had a small role in something she saw once on TV. This is only the beginning, for soon Esther is chucking her life in, throwing away her marriage, distancing herself from her friends and moving to Canada to be near her idol, even going so far as to move in with his sister. This book presents fandom at its worst. It shows the depths that some people will sink to, the abuse they will fling at people who are dating or even near their imagined perfect partner. But it also looks at the avoidance techniques people will use in order to stop thinking about something, to push grief and fear at devastating loss to the very back of their minds, using any method they can to forget for just a moment that something awful happened. While in Canada, Esther's life in the UK is falling apart around her, but she can't see it because she doesn't want to. There were moments I wanted to shake her, to ask her what she was doing, what she thought she was doing. So obsessed with someone she had seen on a screen for mere moments, imagining the life they would have together as man and wife, while her own real marriage is in pieces on another continent. This story shows the different layers of grief and the ways in which people do their best to bury it so they just don't have to deal. We have Naomi, Esther's obsession's sister, who has lost her 3 children and husband in an accident that only she survived. Naomi deals with her grief at the bottom of a bottle. And while Esther can see that this is an issue, she still is blind to her own problems. I can never claim to understand the loss a parent goes through, especially one who is buried so deep in their grief that they don't want to acknowledge it even exists. But I do know what it's like to lose someone, and the pain doesn't go. It does dull, eventually, to become an ache that occasionally tugs at the heart and makes you cry. Esther never allows herself, in the book, to reach this stage. The book is very literal in the way it portrays her coping mechanism. It is to run away, to involve herself in something distracting, never giving herself or anyone else who cares for her the time to process, to digest, to comfort. Really, the social media aspect and the people that Esther meets on her strange, grief-driven journey are scarier than she is, despite her ability to get so close to the person she is obsessed with and his family and friends. I'm honestly surprised the Danger Will Robinson trigger wasn't set off as soon as this woman arrived on Naomi's doorstep. But then people do weird things every day. Ultimately, this novel was one that I have mixed feelings about. I felt incredibly sorry for Esther at the beginning and the end, but her behaviour felt unhinged, as I guess it was meant to. And she was decidedly selfish, barely sparing a single thought for her husband, who was also going through grief. There were moments when I wondered if I was meant to have a kind of Yellow Face by Rebecca Kwang feeling for this novel, enjoying it for the good writing but disliking the protagonist so intensely that I liked it despite who she was. Maybe? Anyway, Esther Is Now Following You by Tanya Sweeney definitely gives you food for thought, makes you consider what you say and how you act on social media when it comes to your favourite actors and the people in their lives. A little dark, a little sinister, and definitely a social media monster to consider when you're picking out your next read. Also, I have to say, incredibly clever marketing. The book is released on the 29th of January. Last week was incredible. That's the only word for it. I spoke with two authors, got a fantastic episode for February and another amazing one for March. And I am now reading two books that could mean even more brilliant content is coming your way in short order. Work is also so busy that I have been really doing very little else. My Instagram hasn't been updated. My weekly reading wrap up on TikTok is waiting to be recorded. And I still haven't watched the last episode of Percy Jackson, which I have to say is much better than the films. I can't believe that the first month of the year is nearly done. January always lasts so much longer than any other month of the year for some reason. Payday has come and gone. I waited in a 90-minute virtual line for the Fairy Loot special edition of The Night Prince, and I managed to restrain my purchases and only ended up buying 19 books, maybe a little bit less, possibly a little bit more. I need to count them over the course of this month. How was your January? Is there anything you're really looking forward to for February? I have a birthday, three new books, and did you see that Madeline Miller has finally announced a new novella is being released in August? Yeah, I'm very, very excited about that one. That made my day and I ordered it straight away. If you are a card-carrying member on Waterstones, you can get a special signed edition if they're still available. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, why not share it with your friends or family? And please do leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, because it really does help with that blessed algorithm. You can find me on Instagram at beingbookishpod, on X at being_bookish, and on TikTok at beingbookishreviews. If you prefer reading, you can head to beingbookish.co.uk to find out about my 2026 reading tracker and all the links in one place. I have got a few reviews that I need to put up there at some point in the very near future. Until next time, this is me saying farewell. Thank you.